Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thanks so much for joining us, and happy pre-Thanksgiving week to any of you out there in the United States who might be celebrating with us. This is Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, and we are here this month focusing on diversity and inclusion in a variety of different ways. Last week, we did a show on allyship, and the week before that, we had one of the foremost experts on diversity on the show, Patty Dingle, who was just a riot. She was wonderful to have join us, so I invite you to check out those prior episodes. And today, we actually have a dear friend, a mentor of mine, and a person who I'm collaborating on several projects with, Dr. Julia Ivey of Northeastern University. She is a powerhouse. She has written a book. She has two PhDs. She is currently the president and co-founder of the Be Edge Principles, and additionally, she's an executive professor at Northeastern University. Now, before I formally connect you with Dr. Ivey, I do want to take a moment to thank our sponsors, the people who make today's show possible. Markham Search offers, LLC offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, and they offer temporary services as well as payroll services and executive search. So please do keep them in mind for all of your recruitment needs. So back to the show. Dr. Ivey, intergenerational workplaces. We were talking a little bit offline about how pre-COVID, the intergenerational workplace was already a hot topic that a lot of employers were struggling with. And now that you have an intergenerational workplace that is simultaneously working remote for the most part, you're getting a greater disparity and lack of unity between the different generations. So that's why we brought you on, of course, today, Dr. Ivey, as you're an expert in this field. Tell us a little bit about the research that you've done on this, and then we can deep dive into some questions specific to how we can all learn to work together in a more harmonious, synchronized way.
Thank you very much, first of all, for having me in your program. It's always great to work with you, Jennifer, in all the projects we work together. And what striked my attention most is like who our millennials are. And I found that millennials are the most educated workforce for all this workforce before, all generations before. If we look at like the age of, let's say, 27 of millennials, 27 when we were Gen X, 27 of baby boomers, etc., the percentage of people with higher education is much higher around millennials. Mm-hmm. However, if you look at the same age of people, their employment and their earning history, millennials are the least the least employed generation and the poorest one. Just mm-hmm. like, how wrong is this? Best in our education, then so what? We don't even know how to generalize on this, how to capitalize on this. And this is kind of started my research interest, like, why? Why? They are right here. So I started to look at more detailed on millennials, what who they are. And I found that there are many, many characteristics of them. But we can put them in two buckets, like here and here. One is their brain is amazing. They are multidimensional. They always have several interests, which is a kind of wonderful, but also it's their problem because they're all over the place, we call them, right? So they are very natural in design thinking. They are problem solvers. And this is one kind of part of their characteristics. Another one, they're passionate for diversity, for change, for impact. They care about this. Like, look at one and two. Then I look at this just like, wait a minute, but this is exactly what our society needs right now. We need somebody who is passionate about diversity and equity. And actually, they leave organizations if this organization are not enough diverse. Can you imagine? They just don't want to work in an organization which are not diverse. Also, they are digital native, they problem solving, they love problems, solving puzzles, etc. And this is exactly what we need for recalibration of business model for post-COVID recovery. We need them. So why is the least employed? Tell me.
You know, it's interesting. I was trying to find a quote online. I have a friend of mine who I worked with on and off for 10 years, and she posted, not knowing we were doing a show on this today, saying, I've had it up to here with millennials. I'm not doing it anymore. I know I'm going to get some slack for this, and it's all about the baby boomers, and it's all about the Gen Xers. And I would love to know, and Brandon, I would love your insights too, because I know you coach a lot of executives in all different generations of what are some of the things that organizations can do to reverse the accidental adversarial relationship? Because you have this relationship where it's a you versus me, a they versus us sort of a vibe. And how do we bridge that gap? And by the way, if you're following us on Facebook, please feel free to leave us comments. We're happy to bring in your comments into the show on Facebook on LA Talk Live's page. You can find it on there, or we'll respond to your comments later as well. But Brandon, I would love to know your thoughts first, and then we can turn it back over to Dr. Ivy.
Sure. This comes up a lot. I mean, even at the organization I was at for 6 years, Advancing Women Executives, when we would have experts come and talk about the millennial workforce or how to navigate, that was some of our best attended sessions. And I think everyone's trying to crack that code. I love that Dr. Ivy kind of like, she's the expert. She's like, why is this? Why is this? I thought she was going to tell us. I was like on the edge of my seat. I was like, oh no, I thought you were going to have the answer. So hopefully you do.
I do.
Good. I cannot wait to hear it. So I'm almost like, let's just toss the mic back to you. One thing that I will never forget this though, which I just think is so funny because I'm solidly Gen X. And I'm even then probably more of an older soul. And we were in an event one time, and an expert on millennials was saying that a typical millennial wants to talk to their boss once a day, Typical Gen Xer, once a month. And I was like, if I talked to my boss when I was a young lawyer, even up until last year, once a year, I'd be fine. I mean, it's like, I do my job. I'm going to do my job. I'm going to show up every day and do my job. And I'll never forget, there was a sort of a more senior executive. She was in the C-suite, I believe. And she just stood up and she goes, that's it, I retire. Like, she was out. That was all she had to know, because it explained what she had been dealing with for the last kind of 5 years of just, hey, can I talk to you? 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 And so I do think that's one of the barriers. It's funny because they talk about this a lot, that it's like the boomers and the millennials and the Xers are sort of in the middle, like, guys, just we're all curmudgeons.
Just get along.
So it's all miserable, whatever. Depends which Gen X version you are. But I think that what I found was it's that neat. Now, to Dr. Ivy's point, I think this is the most beautiful thing. They are the first generation of employees to say, what's your social impact program? What is your diversity program? Lastly, and I'm sure Dr. Ivy, I don't want to take anything away from you. It's just the most important thing that I found in my work doing hundreds of corporate trainings to over 20,000 people is this simple fact. Millennials, what the studies that I was reading have shown was they want growth opportunities and ability to learn. You can actually pay a millennial less money and give them growth stretch opportunities or learning environments. And that's what I found in all of my work year in and year out, whether it was me coaching that generation or whether it was watching them in those rooms. If a company was giving them those opportunities, they would stay forever. If those opportunities shrank, you could pay them all the money in the world and they were going to find that stretch somewhere else. So those are the things I found. Dr. Ivy, I was on the end of my seat. You were going to give me the answer to why, as amazing as their generation is, what's going on? I'd love to hear from you.
I guess because they're so amazing. It's exactly so. We don't like them for that.
It's too good.
Because I'm also X, look at the, if you look at the millennials, first of all, you nailed this. Yes, they are here for growth. Why? Because they feel they own their life. They own this. This is their ownership. And If we think about what recruitment is, it means that I'm on the market and somebody will recruit me. So we are selling. Millennials are buying. They're not for sale. No, they're just like, you are not so good for me, employer. Next one. You are not. Okay, I'll try you. And if you prove that you're good for me, I'll stay with you. If you are not good, I'll leave. So they're also job hoppers, we call them. We call them job hoppers because we don't like it that they didn't select us. They didn't choose us. So first of all, this ownership, this is the first word they are known for. And second is they are multidimensional. So what I mean for them, it's natural to have education in this area, but also certificate in that area, which are very often not related almost at all, but also hobby in something. And for them, it's not like for, let's say, baby boomers who will be accountant all her life, but she also would be wonderful in her garden or whatever, you know, whatever second. But right. She would be very clear that this is a job and this is a hobby.
Right.
This is number one, this is number two, and this is my family. And this is kind of like, this is one place for job, one place for hobby, one place for, I don't know, volunteering. For millennials, this is all me. This is me. And these are my dimensions. And they really trying to bring all together. And this is what irritates us a lot. We just like, who you are? They're just like, I am IT guy, but I also am a musician. But you know, I also just, 5 o'clock, it's my yoga class. Please don't even try to keep me this job, which is IT. Because after yoga, I go to my music. So for them, it's kind of all mixed together.
Great.
And this is where I start. Instead of being irritating with them, why wouldn't we fall in love with them? And why wouldn't we employ these for competitive advantage of our own companies? Because this is what is a competitive advantage? It be to be unique. Okay, how can we become unique? Guess what? We have millennials. They are kind of weird combination of these traits, which are they combine. It's such a funny combination that as more I learn them, as more I become again surprised. Like it's normal to be finance professional. In one of my clients, his name is David. He is a professional finance, quite advanced, working in a large corporation. He also after a boxer, Thai boxing.
Right.
And with his wife, they are doing brewery in their own garage, and they also have some rewards for this. Who is David? Who is David? And David is unique. And if his corporation or his sport club or his brewery will be smart enough to combine this uniqueness, he will be special.
Mm.
This is my point. And this is where my methods comes from to help them find the center of this multidimensional profile, to bring this together. And then when define this center, to synchronize with the goal of my organization, because I have my own organizational goals. And as much as I love millennials, I still love my business more, right? Let's synchronize and employ millennials for my company. And this is where we come how to employ, right?
Yeah.
Don't give them a box, organizational structure box. Don't give them job description. This is suffocating for them. Give them a problem to solve and leave them alone.
That's right.
And give them 1 hour a day for all together. Just saying, okay, this is my 1 hour for all millennials. Door is open. But don't bother me before or after. And they understand this. They understand. They will work on their problem in their own weird way. Extremely creative. Design thinking. Problem solving. But they will knock to you once a day, but not to show their loyalty, but to ask their question.
Right.
Yeah, I think a really great point about this is a lot of organizations, to get back to the idea of synchronization, what can we do? You know, Rev Reg, who is one of our listeners and viewers online, she was just saying she's in the Philippines and that they have huge issues with millennial turnover at the call centers there. So it's a big problem. And I think a lot of companies have this problem. And what Dr. Ivy is suggesting is that instead of looking at the person as bad or wrong, if we look at anybody, if I look at a baby boomer and I decide I don't like you because of X, then there's automatically this friction in the organization. And if we learn, like Dr. Ivy was saying, to learn to love it, okay, what's great? You know, I remember reading a great statistic one time about how when you're in love with somebody, you fall in love with the 80% of them that you can tolerate, and then you ignore the 20% that you don't like. And then as the relationship goes on, you focus on the 20% you can't stand and you ignore the 80% you fell in love with. And I'd say, let's fall in love with the 80% of the great part of millennials. And yes, there are things, I'm a millennial, I'm a hybrid millennial, I'm 81, so I'm technically a millennial myself. But I think what's important here is to empower one another. How can we choose our perspective? Because if we're all pointing the finger saying, you're bad, you're wrong, you're this, there's going to be no synchronization. And I loved last week, Brandon, what our guests, the good guys, said in their book, is they said that there are some corporations that are taking baby boomer men, or in some cases, Gen X men, and partnering them with millennial females and having the females teach them how to lead and mentor better. And I think the more that you can get these intergenerational opportunities for collaboration, it's easy for all the people in the C-suite who are probably of a certain age for the most part to have certain ideas and to be separate. But the more that you interconnect and interweave the two, the greater the capacity for innovation and success for the organization and everybody who works for it.
Yeah, that mentor point, I think, was so amazing. Dr. Ivy, do you see that in your work with the mentoring up of millennials to sort of that next gen or the gen above to sort of help them better understand how to motivate them?
Absolutely. And at the same time, this is a stage two. I believe, and you see like my background, EDGE is a 4 steps which really help them desynchronize. So the point is that this developed trust is a wonderful example of what just Jennifer just shared with us. If it's on the level of task of doing something, millennials are not going to be excited about this. So we are back to the stage E, the first stage, and this is a stage of the problem. So organizations share the real problem they are struggling right now, the problem, not the task, not the function. And they say, for instance, COVID, everybody are online. How to bring our clients kind of emotionally attached to the company as they used to be attached when they visited our, you know, store? Or how to find, how to increase, you know, like revenue stream for the restaurants if they have only 50% of capacity. So this is a problem. If we give them to millennials and they ask them, please start doing your, you know, research, then we invite them to connect with us. And this is what Jennifer said. They have their own focus to solve this problem, and they start to ask people who work in the company, like how it was before, how they solve this, and working through their own problem with different generations, this is what makes sense for them. Mm. This is what makes sense for people to see how millennials really care. They really want to solve this problem. So this is a, like, foundation is a, I call this can make your case to shape your space. Millennials are making their case that they are capable to solve the problem, and they're almost CEO, and they're so great, and they're right here. And we just say, good, solve the problem. We're here. And this is where we happened, kind of, you know, synchronize.
And I've seen that. I think that really resonates for me, especially the company I just came from, where it was probably 90% of the millennial workforce. It was the mission, you know, the feminist mission of advancing women executives. And I like to say a few woke men, but like in general, it was a bunch of young women that said, yes, let's get together and advance women. And they, you know, they took this company to the stratosphere. I watched in awe, pun intended for the name of the company, but more importantly, I watched they could solve anything as long as there was a purpose or a mission behind it. And what that did for me, my day, I mean, you know, in this field of giving, especially even coaching and training, they were the ones where I would recharge and I would go, I need to be buoyed. And they would go, Brandon, well, here's the five things you need to do. And, great, thanks. Just push me back out there. And I think that's the other thing. Back to that reverse mentorship, the amount of inspiration I got from a group of people that were so mission focused, you can lose sight of it in your work. But what I found was that inspiration of people just solving a problem based on a common goal. And by the way, one other thing I noticed, the support they provide, I don't know if you've seen this in your research, but the support that I watch millennial women in this case, but millennial men too, I suppose, provide one another, their colleagues, is so inspiring. The way they support, the way they really do meld work and friendship seamlessly into just, there is no break, right? It's just, it's interwoven. I don't know if that was a way that, I mean, I'm sure people liked their colleagues previously, but this generation seems to really just support it almost like in a personal way, which why, and I don't know if you've seen this, Jennifer or Dr. Ivy, but when you fire someone and it's egregious or not for the right reasons, watch the rest of the people follow suit right out the door. It's a great way to do it. Do something wrong to the one and the collective says, but that could be me. There's not that loyalty to that point of I'm going to be a company, you know, feminist now, but company woman or company man anymore, because I love what you say. You be loyal to me first and then I'll be loyal to you. But, you know, I think companies, unfortunately, have lost that loyalty, that exchange. How can managers, one thing that came up in my work, and this is just something interesting where a lot of people have paid their dues, that whole idea, especially law, where I came from. Law was all about, I hated this. There would be people that were so hard on the young attorneys because everyone was hard on them. I was like, I'm just trying to represent my client. You know, be hard on me in your free time. Right now, I have a job to do. But with other people, how do managers and leaders get the most out of the millennial workforce while still honoring that need to keep leveling up and leveling up?
No, what? Don't. So it's a horizontal growth. It's a growth based on problems you are capable to solve. If you are solving like the same 20 years one tiny program, I guess this is, it's how millennials. You know, like, yeah, you are very much working hard solving the same problem, which is like $3 worth of revenue, you know, generating, and you are so good and solving the same problem. They don't really sympathize to this. But if you are capable to solve problems which bring like good return on this, you know, investment, they don't have to be persuaded. They know your price, you know? It's like...
You said something earlier, they're too amazing. I love that. I always want to get a t-shirt for my clients that says victim of being awesome. I mean, I think there's people who are just so awesome that it causes problems for them. And so I love that idea that they're too amazing. How do... To anybody who is maybe of that generation that might be listening, how can they prove... how can they get the job? I mean, is there anything they should be doing in interviews? Is there anything they should be doing in the event so they can get hired? Any suggestions there?
Yeah. So let's, like, example. Her name is Sydney, and she is graduating from a master program in health administration. She wanted to get in right now, it's COVID and all the stuff. So she wanted to get internship, and she sent emails to 30 different companies to get internship for her last semester and, of course, connect to the job and da-da-da. She didn't receive reply to any of this 30, none, because she asked internship, she wanted to be, you know, da-da-da. So she tried to sell, and it didn't work. Then she took my book because my daughter, her friend, recommended this. And she started to use this. So the step number one, I told her, hey, Sydney, first, figure out who you are. Your undergrad in one area, your master is in another area. You're also very much driven with this. Like, who you are? Who, like, what exactly you are? And since she followed these, you know, like exercises, coaching exercises, she defined that who she is, that she is very much passionate of doing web design specifically for healthcare, and specifically, and her drive is to help people with limited vision. When she defined this, she became so, you know, she became full of energy, like, yes, this is what my passion is. Step number two, she sent email to the company she chose. She found that this company probably would enjoy most her expertise. She sent this email where they didn't ask anything. She offered and she started, I am Sydney, I am a graduate of da-da-da program, and I'm passionate with this, you know, my passion to make a difference, to save the world, and especially in this specific area. Would you please allow me to do consulting case for your company as a part of my, you know, mm-hmm. project? 30 minutes. He replied, duh, of course. I'm very much interested. And first of all, I am impressed how much is your passion is. And second, what is my risk? So she approached him. So they set the meeting. It's the first time they met. It's not connection, nothing like somebody who she knows. She just chose the company which she believed would match best to her own profile. She selected him, not him selected her. She recruited him. So then they had a meeting when I asked what the real life problem is up in the middle of the night. So he was ready. Yeah, he gave her the list. She just only one problem from this list. And I told her, like, Sydney, don't take more than one, and kind of narrow, just something what you really can do. So she chose one specific problem, and she chooses again based on her own profile. It's just like, yes, this problem I will try to solve. And he just like, good. And now we come to the stage of developing trust. So she asked who I should speak with your company to learn how the company already doing this. And guess what? The list was four people from different generations. But she came to them listening and full of empathy, full of desire to learn. So she was like a child who wants to learn. She wasn't like this millennial who, I mean, special me. She was one who was a researcher in the field because she used step number two about developing professional and personal trust. I told her, Sydney, you have to learn the language. You have to learn how they speak, how they think, what they do. And tell their story. This was a bingo. This is what Jennifer does in each of her program. She telling us a story, storytelling. So stage number two, develop trust, it's storytelling. And like my favorite joke is like what we always read in our Facebook, by the way, people who are listening ask, what you always read in a Facebook? Always check it out. What? Reply to my own post. Me, my post. Whoever make a comment on my post, I will definitely read it.
Yeah.
So when Sydney or millennials tell the story of a company, they must include quotes of people who already telling them something. This is where this through generational trust happened, because they see that she doesn't tell them anything. She learn about them. She tells about them, not to them. And this is a stage number two. And only after this, I tell them, only now, millennials, you have right, you earn the right to tell your solution of the problem. Before this, you will sell yourself cheap. And they're just like, oh, no. And just like, yeah, sell yourself expensive. Learn their language and speak with the people from other generation on their language. But this is a packaging of your brilliant ideas. And they love this. They love the brilliant ideas. Packaging, it's all who they are. So they bring their multidimensional ideas, like Sydney. She is in healthcare, but also in a web design. She's special. And she also has somebody in her network with all this vision limitations. So she knows a lot about this. This is her unique. She brings this as a solution because she already developed trust.
And I want to touch on something important, though, Dr. Ivy, is that what you're also talking about is how the different generations can see one another as allies instead of adversaries. So say, for example, what you could do is you as a millennial could find ways to add value. And as if you're a baby boomer or perhaps a Gen Xer who's feeling frustrated with the millennials in your office, look at the things that you could use assistance from. What are the areas? What are the problems that you need to solve? And allow the millennials to be a resource. Maybe they're already working for you, or maybe they're the millennials you hire in the future. And we haven't even scraped the surface of Gen Z who's coming up behind them. But I think that the more that we do this, especially in the remote work environment that we're all in for however long we're in it for, it's really important to bring the collaborative pieces in and to ask each other and see how you can allow one another to be of service. Because when we're of service, we feel happy. We feel like we're making a difference.
Absolutely. And again, millennials are the two parts of millennials. One, they're problem solvers, they just share this. But second part of them, they do want to make impact.
Mm-hmm.
If this through generation, if they ask just, please do this because I ask you to do this, millennials would probably say no, thank you. But if we ask them, let's do it to make difference, let's do this to make impact, and this is the impact we hope to make, this is all together. Like what you, Brandon, just said, like they're mission-driven, they're values-driven.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. You know, I've coached hundreds of people, mostly senior leaders, but two of my favorite clients of all time came from the same organization. One I met at a retreat, one was part of this organization. And we worked together both probably 3 to 6 months. And I'm wondering if because they bring so much of themselves and they're mission driven and so much of who they are. What I found, at least in my experience working with millennials, is they're also susceptible to, because of some damage that people can also go and make them doubt themselves and make them question themselves. And that's where I really identify with millennials. I put so much of myself into all that I do that when it's an attack, it feels like an attack on my soul. You know, mm-hmm. even as I would get criticized as a young lawyer because you're not supposed to put yourself in front of a client. Like, I believe in this person. I would do it all the time. Otherwise, why am I representing them? But all the other grizzled attorneys, like, never do that. Your clients are liars. I'm like, well, that's sad for you. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. But the point is, what I watched what in my work was sometimes repairing damage that had been done to them. Because my core belief, and this is so wonderful to talk to you today, is that we're never going to be particularly amazing or the best at what we're not good at, but we can be truly great at what we're good at. And people say, this is where you're weak. And we think it's just finding those things that are just inherently uniquely your strength and finding a way to bring that forth in the world. And of course, build up your weaknesses, duh. But what I found, one of my favorite stories though from working with one of these young women was, and it's the pressure, by the way, not just from work, it was pressure she was getting at home too. Oh, you need to conform. You need to be this, you need to be that. And in her case, she was a data scientist who had pink hair, hosted dance classes. Everything you're saying checks, right? Dance classes on the weekend, data scientist, but also pink hair and like just stands out like a sore thumb among data scientists. And, you know, her mother's like, put your hair in normal color, you'll never find anyone. And the people at work are like, really, dance class? And I was like, well, what's your happiest moment in the day? And she goes, just being in the front of that room. And I still do it. I do power poses, Amy Cuddy, thank you. And she has this pose where she stands up and she puts her foot forward and she goes, bring it. That's how she would get her class. And I went and I said, well, what would it be like to do that in your career? What would that be like to do in your life? And she said, I would just be the pink haired, data. And I was like, then fine, be the pink haired data scientist who's a total badass, who's 100% you. And let's see if we don't start checking some boxes. And lo and behold, you know what happened? She exited out of that company pretty quickly. Turns out she was never meant to be a data scientist. She was meant to be an amazing program leader. It was more that she had a data brain. So she solved all these problems for this organization, helped them level up, became this amazing leader, keeps getting promoted. She can't not get promoted. You know, everyone, I believe she's having a nice relationship now, but even if she wasn't, it doesn't matter because she's not with the wrong person. And I think that that's also its own gift. But my point is, that's my favorite story. She stopped caring about what everyone else said and said, what if I would just, I stood in front of my own life and said, bring it. And in her case, it was 100% her. And I just love that. I love that she doesn't do anything remotely what she used to, but she does what she's meant to. And I love the idea that she'll find who she's meant to be with and she'll be who she, and all this other negative information, you know what it was? She still hears it. She just doesn't listen to it. Or maybe a better way to put it, I believe, is she listens to it, but she's no longer willing to hear it. And I just, that's like,
as far as I understand, Jennifer wants us to find what that company was supposed to do to keep this wonderful person inside. Because in your story, I love the story, this person is a winner. The company is a loser.
I 100% agree.
What can the company do? And I also think about the story I had like a couple of days ago. I talked with somebody from the government, our government. And he works in environmental department. And he says like, oh, it's, I work 20 some years there. Everybody work 15, 20 years. And guess what? I'm not going anywhere. It's a good life. I like my benefits and people are passionate because it's environment. So it's a good topic. And I ask, of course, what about millennials? Just like, no, they come here. They're here for 3 years. They see that no way to growth. No way to, you know, do something, you know, every time different, like solving problems. They have to do what they have to do. It's a government, Julia. So they're losing all these millennials. And now they have all these, you know, baby boomers / access us. And that's it. And they're fine. So they just put the cross on millennials because they're just not fit. And I started to challenge them, kind of like, but millennials right now, 50%+ of workforce, by 2025, millennials will be 75% of workforce. We cannot cross them. You know, like if we lose our people, pink hair data analysts, our company is not going to be competitive. We want the company to be competitive. So let's think about the company. And I tell this government people just like, okay, you have 80% of the work, like everyday routine, do this. You do this 25 years, 20 years, enjoy your benefits. But 20% of what you do, you can at least take time to divide in the problems and give these millennials to say, okay, be a champion. And this is what they can do in their own way. This is a point. They will solve this in some kind of weird way. They're digital natives, you know, they kind of solve this. They kind of do it faster than they think, I think sometimes, but they do this. It works for them.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's a wonderful story. Thank you for one winner, millennial, and one loser, a company.
And the company, I think that what we can all learn from this experience is that the company really has an opportunity to step up. When I ran my company for about 10 years now, it was a company that I started and we had many millennials who worked with us. And I attribute a lot of our success to our manager. We had a wonderful manager who was very hands-on with all of them and would meet with them multiple times a day. But the other thing we were doing is we were constantly coming up with new roles, ways for salary increases, ways to create greater community. And in all the studies and research I've done, I found it's very valuable to find ways to allow them to feel like they're part of a community, like they're giving back, and to give them more challenging opportunities. Even if it's just 6 months after they started, a lot of organizations, law firms in particular, would turn their nose up and say, nope, this is how we've done it. This is how we're always going to do it. And those law firms are going to go out of business if they haven't already, because they're not changing with the times. They're not adaptable and malleable and flexible to, okay, maybe I do need to create a new role for this and it's going to be new paperwork, but it means I'm going to get to keep this person an extra year or maybe even 5 years, which would be priceless when you think about it in terms of hiring.
I love that word community, by the way, Jennifer. I mean, for all of us, wherever we are in our stages of our lives, ex-boomer, you know, when you are in a job and you don't feel like you're part of the community, it is so isolating. And, you know, knowing yourself and where you belong and where you can add value, I think it's such an introspective journey. But I just appreciate you talking about how important community is and work.
Wonderful. And let's learn from protests. Like I'm, as you hear from my accent, I'm from Belarus. And right now it's a huge protest movement driven by millennials. Look at the United States. You know, they don't need to be guided to be in this protest. And I mean, again, we can say like, oh, we don't like it, but otherwise we can learn from this, how these protests energize them so much. And I think it was a wonderful article of Kathleen Eisenhardt. Like it was 2002, old article in Harvard Business Review. The point is like simple rules, strategy, simple rules. If millennials, they do not want to be given task to do, they want to have mission, but we also want to set rules, you know, like 3-5 maximum, yeah, and say like, this is your sandbox. Please do what you believe is right to solve the problem. The simple rules, in your team, it must be at least one more person from other generation. If you set these rules, they're fine. They're fine, and they will work together with generation, but they must feel ownership. They just cannot stand this top-to-down methods, which traditional organizations still very much driven with. And they're losing millennials. Again, 75% of workforce very soon. And it's, again, my advice for this government agency that I just talked. Okay, I know, guys, that you are sitting here. Just divide all 100% of your work for something what stable and you want to do it again and again. Good for you. And something like sandbox, which they can, like innovative products that they kind of almost pilot project, they will handle to you and then you will make it sustainable. This is what millennials are good at. Yeah. In the mayor office of Boston, actually Mayor Walsh developed a special department, New Urban Mechanics. All of them, all these people, and it's government, millennials, 100%. So this department, all they do, they take the cool idea, whatever ideas, anybody's idea, and they develop this to the point of like instrumental mechanics. And then they handle this to other departments. And the departments love this because it's already instrumental level. And millennials love it because they're kind of sandbox. So right now we develop this project with them for community for East Boston, where we are trying to bring together millennials, like affluent educated millennials, and local community, ethnic community, Latino community, which historically there. So instead of millennials pushing out gentrification of this Latina community, we want them synchronized in this movement of the beauty of East Boston. So Mayor Walsh office gave us this team of New Urban Mechanics, and this is what exactly millennials are good at.
Yeah, I completely agree, Julia. And that's why I invite everybody. Very soon, Julia and I will be, Dr. Ivy and I are going to be releasing a special series on different ways to create synchronization. If this piques your interest at all, if you're like, how do we synchronize neighborhoods of millennials? How do we synchronize veterans? How do we synchronize people who are going through a career change? You can check out on Dr. Ivy's website or my website, and we're going to release this soon on YouTube. And it's a 7-part series talking about what is synchronization about. Imagine what if in all areas of your life, you could find synchronization. And Dr. Ivy, you and I could talk about this forever. And obviously, Brandon, you and I can talk forever in general about anything. But I do know we're running out of time today. So Dr. Ivy, do tell people where they can find the book and where they can find more information about all this incredible work that you're doing.
Thank you again. And as you notice, I'm very passionate about this idea. And it's a method. It's a 4 steps, EDGE, which always bring to BE. B. And B we can define as a boutique employability, as built-in employability. But right now, it's like in B. It's a something essence to be. And these steps are described in my book, Craft Edge for this was in Amazon. But also our web, my website is bee.edge.com. Or of course, visit please Metaphysics website of Jennifer Hill, because we work together a lot. So this is my book. And yes, millennials are amazing if you synchronize with them and they synchronize with you. It's a almost nuclear physics reaction, you know, like they are kind of dormant. But when we just like allow them to be them, they kind of like already open in this, you know, nuclear, you know, core. And then we just say, okay, this is a problem. This is a mission. Make it work. It's amazing.
Allow them to be successful. I love that. And again, it all comes back to allowing, just trusting. Everybody, what it comes down to, and the more that we perceive one another through those filters, you're up for the highest and best good, I'm up for the highest and best good, and there's a way for us to collaborate. And Brandon, I want to give it over to you, my friend, because you're so good at summarizing and giving us kind of closing thoughts as we close out today's show.
Yeah. Once again, for the 100th time, we're not going to have any three. We're going to have too many, but that's okay. Millennials are too amazing. That's our number one problem. That's what I took away. Find the center and synchronize. I love that you ended on synchronicity. Give millennials problem to solve. And if you are a millennial, find a problem to solve. Share your passion if you want to get that big job. I think it's a good advice, not just for millennials, for everyone. Be proactive and reach out. Offer to help and then listen when empathy, when you do. That is brilliant, brilliant, brilliant advice. Thank you, Dr. Ivy. Sell yourself expensive might be one of my new favorite taglines. That's smart. But you got to prove your worth before you can, right? And then make an impact. Build your employees' bid or sandboxes. Give them ownership. In my humble opinion, because I adore this human, dye your hair pink and rock out as you are. The other person I was thinking about just found her dream job too. And she never lost sight of her value and tried to add as much value as she could to this organization until she couldn't add anymore. And that's on them. I love that. There are winners and losers, and your organization should not be a loser. If you want to find a win, listen to what Dr. Ivy said and Jennifer's insight today. Find a way to give these freaking amazing humans who are going to be 75% of the workforce in the history in the future a way to level you up and make you as amazing as they are.
Beautiful, my friend. Thank you, Brandon. Thank you, Dr. Ivy. Thank you to Rev Reg, Jean Jewel, everybody out there who's been tuning in, leaving us your comments, Tony Sip. We've gotten some great comments and interaction from today's show on the Facebook Live page for LA Talk Radio. So for those of you who want to interact with us live, we do invite you to check out on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. It's normally up within 24 to 48 hours. And please do rate the episodes, give us feedback. We're so grateful for all of you out there rating us. I think we have double the amount of reviews that we did last week. And that's all thanks to you, our incredible listeners and viewers. And, you know, we're just grateful. We're grateful to be able to be here with you on Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific and engage in these inquiries with you. So happy early Thanksgiving, everyone. Happy birthday to Brandon Maslin, who is a year younger. He went backwards, you can tell. And thank you so much, Dr. Ivy, for joining us today. Wishing everybody a wonderful rest of your week.
Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.